This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the talented jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingalls. Eddie Daniels is giving us an impromptu sax concert in the music room of his Santa Fe home. As he plays, he looks right into my eyes, as if he's talking to me, which of course he is, through the sax. Floor-to-ceiling windows at one end of the room look out on a sweeping New Mexico landscape, the rolling hills of the high desert spotted with pinon and juniper trees. The interior landscape includes a grand piano, several saxes, clarinets, and a music stand loaded down with music scores sent for Daniels to look over for upcoming dates. Daniels, more famous for his clarinet playing, today plays the tenor sax that offered him an entry into the New York jazz scene in the mid-1960s. As a Brooklyn 9-year-old around 1950, he tells David House and me that it was an alto sax that gave his young life an anchor.
I was a fat little kid, you know, and so I was not like one of the cool kids who could go out there and, you know, hang with the other kids. It built a power in me that I got good at something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I discovered that all by myself, I could create something. So somehow this saxophone was something to nail my attention to that I could get when I was 9, and somehow I thought it was a little kind of a tunnel to something else.
Did you know what at the time?
No, mm-hmm. No. I just knew I was going to blow into it and see what happens, which is kind of what I do now, too, at the same level. You know, somebody counts off a tune, I blow into it and see what happens.
Okay.
From the age of 9, Daniels just kept at it. By his young 20s, he was teaching school and playing in a weddings and bar mitzvahs band on the weekends. Then it was on to Juilliard Music School for classical training and a master's in clarinet. But it was still his sax chops that got him invited to play with some of the top New York jazz guys. Then in 1967, Eddie Daniels' musical life, like a good jazz performance will, took an unexpected improvisational turn.
So we were doing this album live at the Vanguard, Thad Jones, Mel Lewis Band. And we're playing a tune called The Little Pixie, which is very fast. And everyone in the saxophone section gets 32-bar solo. And the melody is like... really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I was, a Juilliard clarinetist with my tenor from the band, but I had been playing jazz on the clarinet on the side, and Thad never gave me anything to play the clarinet on in the band. He was basically mostly a saxophone lover, you know, so... Joe Farrell started his 32 bars, then Jerry Dodgen, next 32 bars, then Jerome Richardson. When it came to me, I just picked up the clarinet and played the solo on the clarinet. After I played the clarinet solo, Thad said to him, "What the F did he do that for?" I won a Downbeat Award for a New Star Clarinet, or talent deserving of wider recognition, Downbeat, for those 32 bars. So that also helped me make that transition to think, oh, maybe I can do this, mm-hmm. You know.
Sort of draws you to the clarinet. I mean, what do you find different about the clarinet in a jazz setting?
Well, I mean, you've heard clarinet in jazz settings all through your life. Dixieland clarinet, you've heard... there's a lot of different voices on the clarinet, and I found that most of them didn't have the purity of the sound that I liked, having had that background of classical study. So, and also having had the background of being Coltrane in my life, in my head somewhere, I dig Train, you know, and Charlie Parker and Stan Getz. So I kind of felt that I wanted to put together a modern voice on the clarinet that made that instrument fit into today, rather than a kind of otherworldly music of Dixieland or swing. You know, I love swing, but it's not today's music. We don't talk like that anymore. So that was my idea, and it wasn't just an idea. It's kind of what I had to do anyway.
There's a lot of folks that play the saxophone, not that many that play clarinet.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious about why you think that is.
Well, the clarinet's harder. 100 times harder than the saxophone.
Why is that?
The clarinet is like being married to a very finicky, beautiful, sensitive woman that needs a lot of caring. The saxophone is like being married to a woman who accepts you the way you are and you can do whatever you want anytime you want to. But you prefer the more sensitive woman because she's got a little more depth. She's harder to handle, takes more work. And that's what the, you know, I never thought of it that way, but that's what the clarinet is.
I was going to say, man, you must have thought about this one before. That's a really good explanation.
Well, it's true because you don't play the clarinet right, it squeaks right away. It talks back to you. And it makes an ugly sound unless you have to really work at the clarinet, you know. One of the famous clarinet players, I'm trying to think who it was, Johnny Mintz, was a famous swing clarinet player. At one time, he looked at the clarinet, he closed the case and said, "You win." It's the nature of that instrument. I have to work at the clarinet every single day.
This high-ceiling, brightly lit, climate-controlled room is where Daniels practices his clarinet and saxophone every day, when he says he's not playing tennis.
Well, we have this room filled with instruments. There are, like, clarinet parts all over here, 2 tenor saxophones. How many clarinets? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 clarinets.
And then this looks sort of like a doctor's table to me.
Yeah, it is like a doctor's table, but you don't want to have surgery on a doctor's table that looks like this, I'll tell you. Well, here's my knife with my reeds. I got all the reeds in little parts. This is where I dip my reeds into this. And here are all these barrels for clarinet, saxophone mouthpieces. All of this in service of making a sound on an instrument. All of this has to do with ba. And what I like ba to be ba or ba. You know, it all has to do with how do I want the sound to be.
Yeah. what you just described, you sort of hear a sound in your head that then you have to...
My playing is singing, is internal singing put out on the instrument, yeah. Let's see if I can get this going here. A lot of feelings going through that. I started off with a lot pretty fast, and then suddenly I started getting a little more mellow. Yeah, you know.
My name's David House, and we're talking with the one and only Eddie Daniels up in Santa Fe at his home. Who were some of the folks that really grabbed your attention when you first started getting into the music and really deciding, okay, this is who I'm going to shoot for? Who?
Well, Benny Goodman was a first idol. You know, Benny Goodman, Artie Shore. Those were early kind of swing kind of players. And then it was Stan Getz, Miles Davis. And then I started hearing more and Coltrane. Mm-hmm. So you get inspired by other people.
And what any particular performances, recordings, or
oh, yeah. Live, you know, live? Sketches of Spain, Miles mm-hmm. Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, Miles' recordings with Coltrane during those early years, hearing Coltrane. Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, you know. Now Coltrane, you know, you hear him on Muzak. Now Coltrane is all over the place. But then, you know, it was just like, hey, Giant Steps came out. We all grabbed the record Giant Steps. We start listening to it, you know, and, you know, just got us all excited. It's like when you hear somebody who's really, really great and you don't understand it. If he's really great, there's a logic in it. There is something that really, it's just that we haven't heard it enough and that our internal hearing and mechanisms, even if you're not a musician, hasn't quite gotten why that is. Why is that good or is it good? And you start hearing it a few times and you start, oh, yeah.
There's an experience that I had really similar to that, which you know, like I'm a little bit younger, so my thing is like a lot of the fusion stuff. So I would get Weather Report.
Yeah.
Some of the more complicated stuff that they would do. And I'd sit there and kind of go, I know I don't get this, but I know that I want to. And then after listening to it a few times, you're kind of like, oh, this is amazing.
It's not an intellectual getting it. It's just like, you know, it's like getting used to the taste of beer. The first time you taste it, you go, ugh. Or any alcohol. I never liked alcohol. For some reason, being in New Mexico, I drink a margarita every night. I've gotten used. You get used to the taste of it and then the logic of it. You can like it and not understand it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to understand. You don't have to understand how to make a red sauce in order to like it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it sounds to me like in the example that I just gave, I don't feel like I could hear it. I didn't feel like I could really hear it until I listened to it several times.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, even this new album, I sent it to one of my friends in New York, Lawrence Feldman, who's one of the top saxophone clarinet players in New York now. He was a student of mine in the early days, and I really respect him. So, and he even came to the session. He was one of the guys that said, you have to play the saxophone again. We want to hear you play. You know, so I respect him a lot. So I sent him the album, and he even said it took him the second listening to this album to realize what was on it. He couldn't get it the first time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like that with a lot of things, you know.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Let's talk a little bit, and we can go back and forth, but you did mention the new album that you have. And so let's talk a little bit about this new album. It is, it's a quartet.
Yeah. It's called Mean What You Say.
Mean What You Say.
And the title of that comes from a tune that was my solo tune with Thad Jones' Mel Lewis Band. So I just thought, on this album where they're asking me to play the saxophone again, I would do the tune Mean What You Say as one of the tunes. And so I thought it's a good title for the album. ¶¶
saxophone going on in this.
Yeah, well, I made a departure after Thad's band. I made a decision after Juilliard that the clarinet was my voice. I felt that it was a voice that was needed, and there were a lot of great saxophone players, and I was one of the good ones. I won't even say one of the great ones, but a pretty darn good one. Maybe, next to the top level or whatever, if you could measure anything like that. And I just thought on the clarinet, I had something that I thought nobody else had for that instrument. So why not use it? Because it was more my voice at the time. So for the and at that time, I got a contract with GRP Records, Grusin and Rosen, Dave Grusin, you know that name?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Who lives here in New Mexico. Maybe you'll do a thing with Dave. And so I did for 6 years, did an album a year with those guys, mm-hmm. which was great. Kind of put me on the map. Yeah. Clarinet album.
Right.
They didn't want saxophone. They wanted the voice, that new voice. So that was great. And that made the voice, and the clarinet is my voice. But the saxophone still is on. It was still there, and all of my friends who know me from the early days said, we want the saxophone. And the guy who is the producer of these albums, Bill Soren, is a lawyer who decided to record people he loves. He's an ex-lawyer for Converse Technology.
Okay.
One of the people who put that company together, so he's got some bucks. And he decided, I'm going to record people, start my own label and record people I love. So he said, I want you playing saxophone. You have to. Jones, I used to play gigs for him. He was the leader, and he'd hire me to come and play saxophone and clarinet in his band.
Right.
And here's a tune that Hank and I wrote on the date. And here's how it came about. You know, when you're on a date and you're with friends and you're in between takes, Hank and I are talking, and he's saying, you know, we're talking about how people talk so derogatively about other people, and they don't say nice things, you know. But nowadays we say, you mofo son, you know, mm-hmm. the worst stuff you could say about someone. He said back in the old days, they'd say, why you? You no good, why you? But they'd never enumerate it. You know, it's like we live in this time now, we have to kill someone and blow them up in order to get off your energy. Back then you could just say, why you? And you felt okay. Now you have to kind of blow them up. And you still don't feel better, you know. So Hank said, why you? So I said, let's write a tune right now called Why You. And we did, just the two of us. I wanted to have a chorus say, why you, on the record, but Bill said, no, it's a jazz record. You can't do that, you know.
Eddie Daniels' latest CD includes both his tenor sax and clarinet playing. It's called Mean What You Say. He spoke with me and David House. For much more from our interview session with Eddie Daniels, visit our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org, for more profiles of jazz musicians with New Mexico ties. The Jazz of Enchantment radio series is engineered by Nola Daves Moses with help from Carol Boss. Web design and photography by Genevieve Russell. Support comes from the New Mexico Humanities Council, the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.